Welcome to Sightseeing Japan, the podcast where we explore the land of the rising sun. I'm Paul Bresson.
And I'm Jason Neeling. And guess what? We just came back from the land of the rising sun.
We explored.
I just got back like 2 days ago. Paul, how has your reintegration into American society been going? And the American time zone?
Solidly okay. Time zone's been a little rough. Society's been all right. I was fine at first. 4 days of working in a row. I'm getting a little bit tired, but mostly good.
That's good.
You sound like maybe not so good.
I'm doing okay. I wanted to spend as much time as possible in Japan, so I went back to work the day after I got back. I got back at 2 p.m., stayed up till like 6 p.m., slept till 11 p.m., and then I couldn't get back to sleep, and I just had to do a whole work day after that.
That's crazy. I always take the day, man. I've learned my lesson.
I can pay for an extra day in Japan with a little misery when I get back. That's a fair trade-off for me, I think.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so today we're going to be starting our recap episodes. We were in Japan, well, I was in Japan for just over 3 weeks, so each of these recap episodes is going to cover 1 week. It probably makes sense to start at the beginning. So today is mostly going to be me telling Paul and all of our listeners about all the cool stuff I did all by myself. Well, not all by myself, actually. Paul, I met so many awesome people this trip.
That's good to hear.
And we met a lot of people together, too. But even before you showed up, like, in the past, one thing I've really enjoyed about trips to Japan is, like, the solitude. And, like, I don't know, just being able to float around and, like, just be on my own. But this time, I find myself, maybe it's the fact that I'm getting older, but I just find myself coming out of my shell a little more and just talking to whoever I come across. And it's kind of nice, you know?
Is that a getting older thing? It kind of reminds me of being a kid and I always just wanted to like just sit there and enjoy something. And my dad's just start a conversation with everybody we walk by, you know?
I think it kind of is. Maybe it's like as you get older, you care less about, you let go of the inhibitions that might keep you from talking to strangers randomly, you know?
It's true.
So I'm going to be talking about a bunch of cool people that I met. But I did want to mention, like, we met so many great people, but I'm going to leave out names, one, to protect people's privacy, and two, just so I don't, like, make anybody feel bad if I don't call them out by name or something. I don't know.
Okay.
That makes sense? I'm just going to try to avoid using names, but those people that I met, if you're listening, you know who you are. Another thing I wanted to mention about these recap episodes is this trip I tried to take a lot more audio recordings than I normally do, like background sounds to just kind of make the episodes a little more immersive. So you're going to hear some ambiance, try to put you in the place that we're talking about as we go through these.
On behalf of all our listeners, thank you for taking the time and effort to do that, because I think that's really cool.
You're welcome. But you might also notice as we go on, I kind of started to forget about that more and more, and I think the recordings are more sparse towards the end of the trip. But
fair enough.
Well, should we get into it? We've got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, where do you want to start?
Well, first, you can hear what the airport sounded like. It was awful. I don't know. I just don't like airports in general. I want to get to my destination, and airports are just like, it feels so slow and inefficient. And
I get what you're saying, but the flight takes off when the flight takes off, you know? Hopefully not delayed. As long as it's not delayed, I'm happy.
That's fair. It's not even the inefficiency that bugs me. It's just like the sitting around. Like the fact that you have to show up hours before you leave, and then you have to sit on a plane for 13 hours.
I know.
It's just so much time. It feels so useless.
They always say international flight, show up 3 hours early, and then I get through security in 4 minutes. And I'm like, all right, well, I have 2 hours and 20 minutes till my flight starts boarding.
But at least I know I'm not going to miss the flight.
That does kind of feel good.
Yeah. Well, okay, I'll skip over the flight. Well, actually, let's see. I also have my pictures up here so Paul and I can go through them and I can remember what happened. So I said bye to Yia. I got on the plane. Check it out, Paul. Nobody sitting next to me. That was pretty great.
That's awesome.
Look at the the leg room I had here. Oh, yeah. Stretch them all the way out. I won a Texas Hold'em tournament on the plane. That was pretty exciting. Okay, so I got to Japan. Day one, I turned on my Yubigi eSIM. You may recall last year, I had a bunch of trouble with the internet. So this time I got a Yubigi eSIM and it was fantastic. I didn't have a problem with it. It worked immediately. Highly recommend it if you're looking for an eSIM.
So when you say eSIM, is that like you downloaded an app and turn that on and you get internet through that?
Okay, so you get the Yubigi app. That's U-B-I-G-I. And then there's a link in there that lets you download the eSIM and it like installs a digital SIM card on your phone. And it just stays there, and you can like turn it on and off. So it's still on my phone. And whenever I take another trip, no matter where I'm going, like they have, you can get service all over the world with this eSIM, and you just flip it on and turn off your domestic SIM card. And then you can go into the app and add a data package. It doesn't do voice, it's just data.
Okay.
But really convenient.
So, yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. Okay, so I went through customs. I took a train to Shinagawa Station. I stayed at the same hotel I did the first night on my last trip, Shinagawa Tobu Hotel. It was nice, just how I remembered it. My phone automatically connected to the internet and everything. And of course, my first meal was at Family Mart. I had to get my Famichiki. That was satisfying.
Oh, two Famichikis.
Oh, yeah. And you can see the egg sandwich in the back there. Then I went to Shinagawa Station the next morning, real early, because I was going to take a train down to Osaka. Got my ekiben, of course. Eel and clam. Very tasty. I did see Mount Fuji on the way down to Osaka. Just a glimpse of it. No snow on the top. Paul, you heard about that, right? That, like, it's been over 130 years since Mount Fuji had no snow that late in the season?
Yeah. And from what I saw, that was as far as recorded history went. So at least 130 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. It was crazy warm. It was an unusual fall. And that'll come up again. At Osaka Station, I saw a couple interesting trains. There's the Hello Kitty Haruka. What do you think, Paul?
It's cute.
Pretty kawaii.
Yeah, not overdone. Tasteful.
But this is the train that I rode on.
That's huge. Is that double-decker?
I'm not sure what that big bubble is on the front. I don't think it was double-decker.
Okay. Conductor just sitting really high.
I guess. Yeah, it looks like a panda, right? Isn't that fun?
It does, yeah.
It was the 30th anniversary of giant panda breeding research stuff, so they turned this train into a panda.
Okay.
And I rode in the green car.
Oh.
Still haven't been in a green car on the Shinkansen, but this is a limited express, but it was pretty comfy, gotta say.
Well, you took a limited express from Tokyo to Osaka?
No, this is from Osaka down to Tanabe, which is where the...
Okay, got it.
Where the Kumano Kodo starts. That train was called the Kuroshio, by the way. The panda one. Okay, so I went down to Kitanabe Station. I stopped at the Tourist Information Center at Kitanabe. And it was busy, man. Okay, so I should explain the Kumano Kodo. This is an ancient pilgrimage trail in Wakayama Prefecture. It's on this peninsula, the Ki Peninsula, south of Osaka. The Kumano Kodo is actually a network of trails, but the main route, the one that I was going to hike, was called the Nakahechi route. And most people start at Takijiri Oji, and you kind of got to go through Kitanabe Station to get there. So they have this tourist information center, and just hanging right around this station and around the information center, there were so many hikers, man. I didn't really know what to expect as far as crowds, like how busy the trail would be. And the trail itself isn't as busy, but I was kind of surprised to just see how many people were here.
Yeah, it's packed in there. Wow.
Yeah. I had some ramen nearby, and you see the rays of sun coming in there because I was sat right next to the window, and I was sweating, man. This was the first time I realized, like, man, it is, like, really hot here. It was not just hot. The humidity was very high, And like in the ramen shop, you know, they're cooking all this hot ramen. I was like dripping sweat into my ramen.
Oh, no.
Not literally, but I did soak a bunch of napkins trying to mop up the sweat on my forehead. It was crazy, man. It was like just really uncomfortable, and I just wanted to get out of there. It was so hot.
Yeah.
Anyway, so from there, oh, wait, before I go on. So Wakayama Prefecture is one of the top producers, maybe the top producer of ume. They grow ume, the Japanese plums. We did an episode about them. And I found this gift shop near the station where they have tons of ume products, Paul. And you know I love the local specialty kind of stuff. So I spent a lot of time in this gift shop and picked up some stuff. They got all sorts of umeboshi flavored in different ways. They got ume jam. This was really interesting, a shiso cider. I got one of those.
How was it?
It was good. You know, I feel like a lot of the kind of flavored sodas and stuff in Japan, it's like, it's a pretty mild flavor. Like, it's not overpowering. Like, it's not like eating a shiso leaf, you know? It's very sweet. It was good. I feel like I'm getting used to shiso. I was never a really huge fan, but it's starting to grow on me the more I have it. And I came across it a lot in this trip.
Okay.
Check it out. Craft gin. Kumano craft gin. And malt whiskey.
Nice.
Aged in Mizunara casks. Kumano Kodo beer, even. So I did walk around Kitanabe Station a little bit. I checked out a nearby temple. But then I had to take a bus.
Next stop is
to get to Kiyohime, which is where I was staying for that night. I was going to start hiking the next morning. And man, even like right outside of the city, once you get into the mountains a little bit, it's just so beautiful. Like Wakayama Prefecture just blows my mind. It's one of my favorite prefectures, I think, just as far as natural scenery. Really amazing stuff. It's so peaceful. Just a few bus stops away, you're just in the mountains in this little tiny group of houses.
That's nice.
And you just hear the birds chirping.
The Japanese countryside is always beautiful.
Yeah. So this guest house that I checked into, I stayed at Kiyohime Annex because the normal Kiyohime guest house was full. So they put me in the annex.
Okay.
But it was really nice. They had this big outdoor balcony thing where they had a little tray where they put bird seed, and all these birds came by, and I just got to sit there watching all these birds coming and grabbing food just a few feet away from me. It was magical.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I got a pretty basic room with a futon and like a little love seat sort of thing.
That looks nice.
Yeah, it was comfy. So I had dinner there that night, and I was kind of surprised to see how many people were staying here too. There were a total of 9 people at dinner, including me. And I was the only American. Everyone else was Australian. But it was super fun, man. Like I said, I met so many great people on this trip. And all of these Australians were absolutely lovely, really interesting people, too.
Had some nice dinner conversation.
Yeah, it was really nice. Really cool people. And the food was amazing. It's just like home-style cooking, teishoku.
That looks like so much food. Is that a hot pot, too, you got?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It was great. I love this style of food where it's just, there's so much variety, you know, all these little dishes arranged around you. Really satisfying. The next morning, of course, I didn't sleep in very long because the jet lag. I think I woke up at like 3 in the morning. So I went outside and watched the sun come up and listened to the birds chirp and saw them come in and get more bird seed. Again, just a magical experience. Really amazing. And then we all got together again to have breakfast together before we set out on our respective hikes. And 4 of those people were going to be hiking from the same spot I started hiking. So we actually got carted off to Takijiri Oji together and started hiking together. And it was super fun. Really great conversation. Like, I had been expecting to do the hike totally solo, you know, on my own in the woods, but it was really fun having these traveling companions and, you know, just getting to learn about each other and experience the amazing views together. It was really cool.
That's nice.
So maybe I should talk about these Oji. So as you go along the Kumano Kodo, there are a bunch of Oji, which are these little sub-shrines of the three main shrines that you visit along the Kumano Kodo.
Okay.
Wait, did I finish explaining the Kumano Kodo? It's okay, the Nakahachi route. Like I said, ancient pilgrimage trail. It's been hiked for over 1,000 years by, you know, Shinto religious pilgrims visiting these three main shrines. There's a Kumano Hongu Taisha, Kumano Nachi Taisha, and Kumano Hayatama Taisha. And there are these Oji, the sub-shrines, kind of marking the trail. Like, you can keep track of how far along the trail you are by seeing what Oji you're at.
Okay.
So we started at Takijiri Oji, and pretty much immediately started climbing.
Oh, man.
The first part of the day was very steep. I was, like, sweaty and out of breath within, like, 10 minutes of getting started. It was pretty serious. Paul, do you remember we talked about this test of faith kind of thing where you have to crawl through this rock?
Yeah.
And it's good luck for childbirth if you get through there?
Yeah.
That was cool. I made it through. I remember saying, like, I don't know if I want to do that because it just sounds... I don't want to be confined, like, in a tight space in rock, you know?
Yeah, right.
But it wasn't that bad. I got through without too much trouble. And I was glad to have some people with me to take pictures of me crawling through because that was kind of entertaining.
Yeah, that is.
And then we continued to climb. So, Paul, what you're seeing right now is the first kind of main viewpoint that we reached.
Wow, you're up so high there.
Yeah, just mountains as far as the eye can see. It was incredible. As I mentioned,
gorgeous.
Yeah, but it was such a warm fall. I was expecting to see fall colors, but there was nothing. It's still 100%
pure green.
Yep. I remember right at the top of this, too, this is where I had my first encounter with the Japanese giant wasps.
Oh.
Hornet. Okay, I had to look it up. I can never remember. Is it giant hornet, giant wasp? It's the Asian giant hornet. And Paul, these things are giant, man. One flew like right up in front of my face and I just like froze. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to move until this thing flies away because they're so big. Yeah, then you find a bunch of little kind of mini shrines, mini temples along the way. See a lot of interesting bugs and we ran into a snake. That was interesting.
Ooh, that's fun.
Not a poisonous one though. There are poisonous snakes on the Kumano Kodo. There's a Japanese viper called the Mamushi. Didn't see any of those.
Okay, that's good.
Fortunately, yes. Yeah, the trail is interesting. Some of it is, what do you call those cobblestones? Maybe they're not rounded enough to be cobble, right?
Not quite, yeah.
They're just like stones. There's a lot of stone. Stone steps, stone stairs. A lot of parts of it are just dirt. There are a lot of roots. Kind of reminded me of Aokigahara, just like with how many roots are popping up out of the ground, you know?
I see
guess
that.
We saw a lot of that in Nikko, too.
Yeah.
With all the volcanoes around, you know, there's a lot of, I don't know, dense soil that the roots have a hard time getting too deep into, I guess. Yeah, it was cool. So the four Australians that I was with for this day, they weren't going quite as far as me that day. I had to go a couple miles further. And, at some point, like, I was just kind of doing the math, thinking about how fast we were moving, and I figured out, like, I'm not going to get to where I need to be at this pace. So eventually we parted ways, which I was very sad to do because we were having such a good time together.
Yeah.
But another thing I wanted to mention is the whole time, you know, we're talking about Japan and stuff, and of course I have all these random facts in my head from doing the podcast, so I kept, like, sharing all these random facts to the point where I started thinking, like, this is kind of weird, like, that I know this much about Japan. Like, it felt like I needed to explain why I have all these random facts. So, like, I hadn't mentioned the podcast at all. And then, like, halfway through the day, I was like, oh, by the way, I do this podcast with my friend. And as soon as I mentioned that, one of them was like, I know that podcast.
Oh, yeah?
He pulled it up on his phone. He was like, is this you? And I was like, yeah, that's me.
Oh, that's awesome.
Paul, would you believe that all four of them had listened to the podcast?
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
I couldn't believe it. That was the first time I'd ever run into people, like listeners, just randomly out there.
None of them recognized your voice?
No. They said something like, oh, I thought your voice sounded familiar, you know? It was like nobody knows, or not many people know what we look like. So it was kind of funny.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Couldn't believe it. Yeah. Really wonderful people, man. I had such a good day with them. And apparently, I even have a place to stay if I ever visit Australia. They didn't say anything about you, but.
Okay. All right. I'll just show up and they can't say no, right? That'd be rude.
Paul, you know, there's a really nice hotel just down the street. Jason, you can come in. We'll have dinner.
All right. So you separated and you had to pick up the pace. How'd that
yes.
go?
Yes. Okay. So when we split up, I started booking it really. Oh, and also, Paul, before we left, we did that like 10-mile hike just to see kind of what 10 miles felt like. And I was feeling like, oh, that's no problem, you know? But what I didn't look up before doing this hike is the elevation maps.
Yeah.
The elevation changes so much and it slows you down a ton.
Yeah, that only took us like 3 hours or something, right?
Yeah. But like getting this 10 miles done in 8 hours is like, you can't be dilly-dallying, you know? You got to keep moving.
Yeah.
Especially considering the pace we'd been at for the first half of the day, I was like, okay, I didn't take any breaks the rest of the day, honestly. I just kept going. Yeah. Near the end of the day, I stopped at a Michi no Eki, little roadside station, for a little rest and to get some drinks. I also stopped and had the bento. When you stay at these guest houses along the Kumano Kodo, they will make you a little bento and send it along with you for lunch. So that was really nice. And they were all delicious. All the food at all the guest houses I stay at was totally amazing.
That's cool.
Really good food. Okay, so I got to this town, Chikatsuyu, I believe it was called. And from here, I still had to go a couple miles, but it was kind of nice seeing some paved roads and buildings. And Paul, is so funny. On this road, as I'm getting to the end of town, I came across two other Australians who had been at dinner. You know, we stayed at the same place the night before. Like, they had started hiking at a different spot, but I just ran into them here.
Okay, they're going the same way.
Yep. So I stopped and talked to them for a bit. And at this point, I'm still like gung-ho. I'm like, okay, I'm pretty tired, but I'm committed to doing, you know, this full 4 days. Did I mention I was going to do 4 days? It's like 40-something miles, 10 miles a day, 8 full hours of hiking each day.
Yeah. Or I don't think you'd mention that, but yeah. Okay.
Well.
I was aware of that.
Yeah. Okay, so I kept hiking. Wait a minute. Let me back up. I'm sorry, Paul. I had some recordings here that I wanted to play.
Okay.
Okay, so here is a little recording I made. This is not long after I split up with the group. Kumano Kodo, day one, 1:12 p.m. It was getting a bit warm and sunny earlier, but it's getting cloudy. There's a breeze blowing through that feels really nice. Ran into a snake with my new Australian friends. That was kind of cool. Not one of the venomous ones, fortunately. Haven't seen any bears yet. Have seen some giant hornets. Those things are scary. And giant, as you might guess. A little bigger than my thumb, I'd say. Kind of like little scary blimps. They're thick, chunky boys. A lot of uphill earlier today. Right now it's relatively flat. Slight decline, which is perfect. Always back is a pretty steep decline with lots of roots, a little hard on the knees. Gotta say that the hike, I don't know, I think maybe day one is supposed to be harder than the rest of it, but it's been more intense than I expected. Feeling good right now, though. Back to you, future Jason.
Thanks, past Jason.
So speaking of the intensity, were you like the only one you ran across that was trying to do 10 miles a day? Were most other people doing less than that?
I think most people were doing less than that.
Yeah. So they were just doing like 5 days or 6 days or only doing part of the trail or something?
Right. I think people were either moving at a slower pace or they were just like using a lot of buses and doing smaller hikes.
Not just walking like the whole thing.
Yeah, just doing like a couple hours of hiking a day or something like that.
Okay.
So yeah, I know we talked about the Kumano Kodo when we did the episode about long multi-day hikes in Japan, And we said that, like, I mean, based on both of our research, we concluded that, like, it's not that bad. Like, if you're in reasonable shape, it shouldn't be a problem for you. And I think that's true if you do, like, what everybody else was doing. But I was feeling pretty confident in my abilities. You know, I had been doing a lot of, like, fairly serious hikes. And I didn't have a ton of time before we were going to meet up. So I wanted to do it quickly. And I just wanted to challenge myself to do the whole thing, you know. But it was tough. It was tough. If you want to do the whole Nakahetchi and do it at an aggressive pace, it's hard work. And by the end of the day, I was sore, man. I was starting to feel pains in my body where I'd never felt pains before. Like, my hips started hurting.
Oh,
I think,
man,
the downhill is even the worst part, you know. It's so hard on your knees.
Yeah.
So my knees started flaring up. My hips started hurting. My shoulders were hurting from the straps on my backpack. My back was doing okay. It's just like the shoulders, just from having that constant weight on you, you know?
Yep.
Oh, that's another thing I should mention. I think most other people were having luggage sent to their next accommodation, so they didn't have to carry it. I was carrying everything I had on my back.
You were a true backpacker.
Yeah. So yeah, it was pretty serious. And here's the recording a couple hours later. I think this is right after I left that town that I mentioned I just passed through.
Okay.
Come on, Okoto, day one, 3:35 p.m. Uphill, more uphill. There's so much uphill. I vastly underestimated this hike. I sweated through everything I'm wearing and my backpack. This is hard. And the map lied to me. It said that everything was paved for the last couple miles. It's not. But I'm back on pavement for now, so that's good. But it's still very, very uphill. I might be a little bit later than I told my accommodation I would be. But I still have a couple hours before check-in time closes.
Dang, you sound tired.
I was breathing hard, man. Yeah, and like I said, I took like zero breaks. I sat down to eat that bento. I sat down for like 30 seconds and got a drink. But besides that, I was just like going straight through.
Dude, I like to watch disaster documentaries on YouTube, like what went wrong. This is sounding like it. Like, you're right, you're like first recording, like, this is fun, it's a little bit hard, but I'm doing okay, and then like it's getting harder, like pretty soon you're gonna be about to die here.
Well, I got some more great views as I got close to my accommodation. I just love the mist in the mountains, you know, nothing better.
Yeah. The trail looks well marked. Was it pretty easy to stay on course?
Yeah, the trail is great. Okay, the difficulty I'd say is like maybe comparable to the hike we did in Nikko.
That was tough. I couldn't imagine doing that 4 days in a row. I was beat after that.
Yeah. It was closer to that than I expected. Like, it was, like I said, the terrain is kind of tough.
Yeah.
But the trail is extremely well marked. Like, you can't go off trail. There are signs on every branch. It says, not Kumano Kodo. Like,
nice.
It makes it very clear.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I got to my accommodation in Tsugizakura Oji. The place I stayed at was called Guest House Mui. Oh, and right before I got there, I came across this fun sign.
Oh, man.
You want to read it, Paul?
Beware of blood-sucking creatures.
And it talks about, ticks. I mean, you got to expect ticks in the forest, you know, that's standard.
What's this about leeches?
Yeah, leeches. You're not even walking through any water or anything. I didn't know that land leeches exist.
I didn't either.
Apparently, they hide under wet leaves and stuff. So that's why, like, I'd always wondered when I was researching the Kumano Kodo, it's always like, don't wear shorts. You should have your legs covered. And this is part of it, is the leeches.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Okay, so I got to the guest house. Like I said, I was feeling good. Like, I was tired, but I was feeling okay. But once I got to the guest house, it just, like, hit me. Like, as soon as I stopped, it's like, oh, man, I'm, like, so fatigued.
That'll happen.
And then my joints started kind of freezing up. when I stopped moving, you know?
Ooh.
And this place, there are kind of steep stairs to get up to my room. My room is at the top of the stairs. And just like getting downstairs to go to the bathroom in the night, it was like, oh, my knees.
You can't even get down the stairs. You're like, how am I going to hike 10 miles tomorrow?
That's exactly what I was thinking, Paul.
Oh, man. Dinner looks nice, though.
Yeah, the food was great. Again, I met a couple other very cool people, an Australian woman and her daughter.
Did they listen to the podcast?
No.
Ah.
No.
Didn't run into. Do they now, maybe?
Maybe. I'm pretty sure I told them about it.
Okay.
I actually, this was their first trip to Japan, I believe, and they had some questions about Japanese history, so I launched into a whole explanation of the Sengoku period to the present, basically.
Okay.
But oh, actually, the mom also practiced Tibetan Buddhism, and she told me about that, and I was like comparing that to Japanese Buddhism. We had really interesting conversations, actually. It was really fun.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay, so after dinner, I made sure to like rehydrate as much as I could. I drank all of the water that they had set out for me. And then the person running the guest house showed me this. This is like what the hike was going to look like the next day. 21 kilometers, 8 hours. There's the elevation map, Paul. You can see I needed to get to the peak of three mountains. And she told me that for those first 6 hours, there's nowhere to get water.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. And so I took that information in and thought about that. And then I went to bed. And again, this is like, let me just list out all the factors that I'm thinking about at this point. It's much hotter than I expected. It's near 100% humidity. It's supposed to rain for the next 3 days, pretty much nonstop. You know, my body's all achy. I'm like dehydrated. I got like a headache. Like everything just kind of feels like it's not quite right in my body, you know?
Yeah.
And I just got to Japan. So like I'm not sleeping well. Last night I got like 4 hours of sleep. This night I woke up at 2 or 3 a.m. and couldn't get back to sleep. So going into the second day, I'm very short on sleep. And okay, there's the humidity, 96% humidity. Severe weather alert, thunderstorm advisory, wind advisory.
Oh, man.
Okay, this is my heart rate while I was sleeping, Paul.
Wow, it's a little high.
Yeah, my phone is telling me, like, this is not normal. Like, I have my Apple Watch on, you know, it's tracking my vitals, and it's telling me, hey, your respiratory rate and your heart rate are, like, double what they normally are while you're sleeping.
You're pretty high elevation at this point, too, right?
Yeah. Pretty high. So yeah, there's 4 hours, 46 minutes of sleep. Like I said, this is just all the things I'm thinking about. There's my vitals saying like, these are outliers, your heart rate. So I got down to breakfast and I'm kind of thinking about all this as I enjoy my delicious breakfast. And the woman working there asked me like, so you're just hiking today, right? And I'm like, I don't think I can do it. I think I'm going to get on a bus. And she was very nice and didn't shame me at all for that decision. And she took me to a bus stop nearby. Oh, after I said goodbye to the goats. They had goats there, Paul.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Well, there's the room I stayed in. Tatami mats and a futon and everything. Pretty comfy. Here's me saying goodbye to the goats.
That looks like the goat saying goodbye to you.
I had some food in my hand. So I got on a bus to go to Kumano Hongu Taisha. I was just going to like take the day off, recover, rehydrate. That was the biggest thing. And get started again the next day.
Okay.
And when I got on the bus, guess who I ran into, Paul?
Your people from your first day.
The four people that I was hiking with. And that was very exciting to see them again.
That's cool.
Because they were taking a bus to this shrine. So we went there together and hung out for part of the day. And like I said, it was supposed to rain. And it did. It did rain. But Kumano Hongu Taisha is beautiful.
That's awesome, yeah.
Isn't that cool looking?
Wow.
I even went and rang the bell and sent a prayer to the kami to help me survive this trip.
Well, you're here, so prayer answered.
Yep, I did survive. Yeah, even just walking up the steps to this temple, I'm like already sweating again because it's still, like I said, really hot still. And so the group of Australians, they were going to take a bus back to this spot where they could kind of hike a couple hours to get back to this shrine. And I really wanted to join them, but just walking up the stairs to this, I was getting winded and I'm like, I need to rehydrate more. Like, I think it's better if I just rest. So sadly, we split up again, and I just I took a bus over to Yunomine Onsen, which is the area that I was staying at that night. And I just kind of relaxed. I ate my bento for lunch and sat and watched the rain and thought about my options for the rest of the hike. So, Paul, we're looking at Yunomine Onsen now. This is a little onsen town. Really rural Wakayama. It's got this little river stream that flows through town, but it's also got hot springs, the hot water bubbling up on the side. So it's like there's kind of this constant cloud of steam rising up.
Yeah, that looks
in the
cool.
Middle of town. Really pretty place, and I'd seen pictures of this before, so I was really excited to visit. This is also where you can get some, I mean, there are multiple places where you can do this, but there's a spot where you can buy bags of eggs, and then you can set your bag of eggs in the onsen and it cooks them. Like, yeah. The water here is extremely hot. Like, you can't even bathe in the water from the hot spring. They need to cool it down before it's safe to sit in.
Sure.
Yeah, really cool place. And from there, I walked over to the accommodation that I stayed at this night, which was called Minshuku Yunosato. Guess who I ran into at Minshuku Yunosato, Paul?
The two Australians or the four
Australians?
The two Australians.
Yeah, the ones that I run into in the town. The other day, I couldn't believe how I just kept running into them.
Well, it is the same path, I guess.
It is, yeah. But like, there are multiple accommodations. Not that many different places you can stay, but it was just funny that we ended up the same place. So dinner there, amazing. And again, I was the only American. Everyone else is Australian. And this place had hot spring baths.
Yeah, it better, right?
Right, at Yunomine Onsen.
That must have felt good on your sore joints.
Yeah, that was pretty great. But again, I didn't get a ton of sleep this night either, you know? Only between 4 and 5 hours of sleep. I woke up really early. But I'm kind of glad that I did wake up early because I went outside, like, I don't know, right around sunrise, I think. And Paul, I experienced the most peaceful moment, like one of the most peaceful moments I've ever experienced. I'm just standing there looking out at these misty mountains. You don't hear any cars. You don't hear anything but the sounds of nature, the crickets and the birds chirping. And it's just like one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. And it was just incredible, Paul.
That's nice.
And I just looked around and took tons of pictures because it was so pretty. Look at the mist in the mountains, Paul. And this place is right on the end of a bridge. So there's like the little lazy river flowing through town too. It's just perfect. Like in that moment, I was just thinking like, man, I could live the rest of my life in a place like this. Just wake up to this every morning. That would be perfect.
Yeah.
I don't feel that peace like ever in my daily life, you know?
That's too bad.
Yeah. There's always noise, you know? Just noise all the time.
Yep.
Anyway, so it's beautiful. But Paul, thinking about all those factors that I listed. Oh, plus, the other thing I didn't mention is that at the end of the hike is Kumano Nachi Taisha, which is right next to Nachi Falls. There's this huge waterfall. It's one of the top three waterfalls in Japan. And it's got this incredible big red pagoda right in front of it. However, I found out a week before I left that that pagoda is currently under renovations and it's all covered up with tarps and stuff.
Yeah.
So given that and all of the other things I mentioned, I decided, you know what? I'm just not feeling it. I don't want to hike in rain, sweating my balls off. Can I say that on the podcast?
You just did.
It didn't sound appealing anymore, you know? So what I did was I canceled my next two accommodations. I decided to go back and chill in Osaka.
Okay.
It was a tough decision. It was sad. And I was thinking, like, I could just, you know, continue to hike, and if I get in trouble, I'll take the bus. But the further east you get, I feel like the more sparse the buses are. Like, when you get that far out there, it's like 2 buses a day. So I was just thinking, like, if I miss the bus and I get stranded in the mountains, like, you don't want to be in the mountains overnight. That's, like, really dangerous, So I'm just like, and I'm solo hiking, you know. I was just thinking about the bad things that could happen. What if my knees stop working?
Yeah, right. And you're just on a mountaintop, like in the middle of nowhere.
And at the time, I was like, I don't know. Maybe I'm done with the Kumano Kodo. But Paul, I think if you wanted to do it with me and we schedule it a little bit later to make sure it's not going to be really hot and it's actually going to feel like fall and we're actually going to see the fall colors, I would do it again.
Okay. I'm intrigued, but you're partially selling it here and partially not selling it.
Because of the intensity?
Yeah.
It's like, intense, but sometimes you got to challenge yourself.
Miserable for half of this time.
I wouldn't say I was ever miserable.
But you're always concerned. You're always going to be at the mercy of the weather, right? Like, we could plan to go mid-November and it could be an early winter that year and it's like freaking snowing in the mountains while we're hiking.
I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, well, like, it's tough to hike a mountain real quick when it's snowing.
Perhaps. I would also send my luggage ahead. I think, okay, if the weather is better, if I sent my luggage ahead, if I had the capacity to carry, like, at least 3 liters of water with me or whatever. Because, like, thinking about that on top of having my backpack, I would have been carrying so much weight.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Even just carrying the water for 6 hours of hiking is a lot.
Yeah. So I don't know, maybe someday, someday I'll finish it. But I really want to be able to see that Nachi Taisha. That, like, that was a big draw for me, was that sight at the very end as a reward for the hike. And knowing that wasn't going to be there, it's like, you know, I know what the Kumano Kodo is now. You know, I've experienced at least, I mean, I did a quarter of it.
I remember you being excited for that.
Yeah.
That was disappointing to hear you wouldn't see it.
Yeah.
I guess, so how did Osaka go?
Okay, so yeah, I took a bus all the way back to Kitanabe Station, and then I took a train up to Osaka, and then I was too early to check into my hotel. So,
yeah, where'd you even get a hotel? Did you just book it on your phone?
That's exactly what I did, yeah. It was the first time, you know, I always try to plan so far in advance. That was my first time, like, booking a day in advance in Japan.
Yeah.
And I had to pay a little bit more than I would have, I think.
Sure.
But it wasn't a big deal. But, so since I was too early to check in, I went. Well, I had arrived at Shinosaka Station, so I went back to the station, and, you know, big train stations like that, they have a mall underneath, so I just went shopping for a while. Oh, Paul, I told you about this little keyboard that folds in half.
Yeah.
Look how tiny that is.
That's pretty cool.
Isn't that awesome?
It fit in your pocket.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just fun. You know, I had a nice, relaxing time looking at all the stores. Found a place selling Lindor truffles. They had a lot of really interesting flavors. They had a matcha one.
Makes sense.
Birthday cake. Had a really fun interaction at the station, too. So they had, like, this table set up in the hallway with a bunch of stuff. So I went to look at the stuff. And this girl comes up to me and starts talking to me about this display that they had. Basically, they were advertising goods from Mie Prefecture, which is a couple prefectures over from Osaka. And she was saying, like, nobody comes over here. Like, you're the first person I've talked to in a while. And I'm like, what do you mean? This station is full of people. And she's like, yeah, but nobody wants to come over here and look at stuff from Mie. But so she had, like, these questions. You know how they always have the survey for visitors or whatever?
Yeah.
She's asking, like, so have you heard of Mie Prefecture? And I'm like, yeah, I know Mie. And she's like, what? And, like, you know, because I'm a total Japan nerd, I had, like, very unusual answers to all of her questions. And she's like, what? This is your sixth time to Japan? And, like, and, you know, I started speaking some Japanese to her. And she's like, what? You know some Japanese? And so it was, I don't know, just really fun. And her English was better than, like, anybody's I've ever met in Japan. She apparently majored in, or I think she was still in college, and she was studying English.
Wow.
And she had lived abroad, too, for a little while. But anyway, so that was fun. And then I went back to my hotel when I could check in, and I checked in and went to sleep. Okay, the next day. So One thing I wanted to do on this trip was check out coffee shops, because Japan has a lot of like just really cool little coffee shops that have a cool vibe, and they really care about their coffee. They make really good coffee. So I found this place just like a couple blocks from Shinosaka Station, and it was amazing, man. Look at this contraption he was using to make the coffee. Like, I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, wow, okay. That looks legit.
But they had this really awesome breakfast set that came with a coffee and an egg, and look at this super thick sliced toast there, and then a little coffee jelly thing. It was like 400 yen, and it was delicious. Wow. And just the attention to detail, I just loved it. Like, I feel like the guy working here was kind of weirded out by how enthusiastic I was about this. I'm like, man, this is so good. But it's like, you just can't get that in the U.S., you know? This is like $3. I got this perfectly crafted coffee, an egg that he boiled for me, like, to order, you know? It's not like he pulled it out of the fridge or something. He boiled an egg for me, and it was still hot when he said it in front of me. I don't know. It was just... this is really cool. And the vibe in there, there's only like one other person and they're playing this music.
I appreciate your enthusiasm, but I feel like I understand the guy too. It's like coffee, buttered toast, and an egg. And you're
and
just
coffee
like,
jelly.
Oh man,
you forgot about the coffee
amazing.
Jelly.
That's the most unique part, probably.
Well, it's like in the U.S., I don't even know where to find a place like that.
I mean, the price was incredible. What do you say, 300 yen? For all of
400
this?
400 yen.
400 yen for all of this?
Yes.
Okay, wow. That gets you like half of a coffee at Starbucks or something?
Right. In the U.S., your only option is one of those chain... well, at least some places have cool little coffee shops, but we don't have anything like that around here. And like, you'd have to spend $10 for, you know, some sugary coffee and like a little microwaved biscuit or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I had a really good time. I was just excited.
Good.
To be able to start my day that way. So then, okay, so I was in Osaka and I had a couple days before we were going to meet up. And I'm like, well, you know, I've been to Osaka multiple times before. What am I going to do here? But I thought about our itinerary for Osaka. By the way, hey, we have an itinerary. We have three itineraries actually out there. You can find them on our Patreon page. You don't even need to be a member on Patreon. Just going to plug that real quick.
Yeah.
But
we have
I thought,
2-day Osaka Essentials itinerary.
Yeah. And couple things on that itinerary I hadn't done. I'd never been to. So I thought, well, let me pull up the itinerary, do some of those. So check it out, Paul. I got on the Tempozan Ferris wheel down by the aquarium.
Nice. Isn't that a great view up there?
Yeah. I think that's... did I read that that's the tallest Ferris wheel in Japan?
That sounds right.
I think. But yeah, the views are pretty great. You can even see into Universal Studios from there. I saw Super Mario World or whatever they called it.
That's cool.
Yeah. See, there it is.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a pretty good view of it.
Yeah, that was nice. And then, of course, that's right next to the aquarium. So then I went to the aquarium, which I also had not been to. And it was pretty busy, man. This was, what day was this? I don't think this was even a weekend, but it was busy. I had to wait in line to get tickets. I was
wow.
like, well, I could just stand here in line by myself and like look at things on my phone, or I could talk to this couple in front of me in line. So I had a great conversation with this very nice Canadian couple. They were actually there on a cruise. They had just gotten off the boat.
Okay.
And went to the aquarium. So we started talking. And once we got into the aquarium, we just ended up like exploring it together. We stuck together for a while, and that was really fun too.
It's supposed to be a great aquarium. How was it?
It was really cool. It is supposed to be one of the best aquariums in the world. If I were to compare it to Churaumi Aquarium in Okinawa that I went to in 2019, I got to give it to the Okinawa Aquarium.
Okay.
Mostly, not even just because of the aquarium, though. The Okinawa one is really cool just because there's so much right around the aquarium to do.
Okay.
And there is a lot around this aquarium in Osaka, too. Like I said, there's the Ferris wheel. There's also a shopping mall, and I'll talk about some other stuff. But the aquarium itself, still very impressive. There's kind of this big, giant central tank, and the path kind of wraps you around it. Like you're walking down a corkscrew around this giant tank where they have their whale sharks.
Okay.
They have two whale sharks.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
They have a whale shark in an aquarium. All the penguins.
There's one of the whale sharks. But as I recall, I think the ones in Okinawa, the whale sharks are almost twice the size of the ones in Osaka, it seems.
For a whale shark, that looks kind of small.
Yeah, you can see the people right behind it there.
For scale. It's only like 2.5 people long.
Mm-hmm. But the aquarium does have a ton of just amazing animals that I'd never seen anywhere before. These little guys, they're these little itty-bitty eels. Those are eels. They're like the width of a pencil. They just stick up out of the sand at the bottom.
Just little guys.
Crazy. Snow crab, is that what those are? Really giant crab. Those are pretty crazy. And they had an exhibit with tons of different types of jellyfish. That was really cool to see.
Yeah, jellyfish are really cool to look at.
They're amazing.
Some rockhopper penguins.
Is that what those are called?
Yeah.
Have you seen those?
Maybe.
They're incredibly loud, man. As you're walking down the hall towards these things, you're like, what is that racket? And then you get in the room with them, and it's like, these things are going to puncture my eardrums. They're so loud.
Wow.
So yeah, I recommend the aquarium if you're into that. I mean, it's impressive. It's really cool just being able to see all these things that you've probably never seen before.
Yeah.
So after that, I went to another place that's on our Osaka itinerary. This is Naniwa Kuishinbo Yokocho.
Is that the little restaurant alley?
Yeah. Check out this stuff. So this is a little, it's like a food court, but it the whole area is made to look like a Showa era street in Osaka. We're talking like mid-1900s.
That's cool.
The vibe is super cool. And all the restaurants are serving different types of local Osaka specialties.
And this is like right next to the aquarium and the Ferris wheel, right?
Yeah, there's like a mall right next to the aquarium, and this place is inside the mall.
Nice.
And I had a bowl of salmon and salmon eggs on rice. It was delicious. I didn't mention the architecture, this aquarium too. It's a really cool looking building.
Yeah, it looks super cool.
Then I went to another place from our itinerary that I also had not visited, Namba Parks.
Nice.
I forgot, had you been here or did you just...
I have not.
Okay.
I just saw that it opened a few years back and I thought it was a cool looking building.
It is cool. So Japan has a lot of like really amazing malls. I feel like in the US, malls are kind of dying out, you know? Nobody's building like new impressive malls. But Japan just has some really incredible malls. And I think this is a good example of that. That's why we put it on our itinerary. It's just like, you know, maybe you've never seen a mall quite like this. They have the rooftop gardens are really impressive. The mall is made to look like a canyon.
Wow. So yeah, right that's there. Really cool.
You see like the walls of the canyon. You can see the stratified rock, right?
Yeah. And then there's just plants kind of growing everywhere.
Yeah. There are a lot of places around here where you can just like hang out too. You just get a drink from the vending machine and like, here, let me show you like that kind of thing. Just nice. Like places to sit and kind of enjoy being there, being surrounded by all these plants and stuff.
Those places are a little bit lacking in Japanese cities too. Place where you can just kind of like sit and relax.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that was a good experience, definitely. So the next day, oh, we're already at day 7, Paul.
You were in Japan 7 days before you met me?
I met up with you on day 7.
Well, I thought you had 2 days in Osaka. That's all sounded like 1 day.
It was like 1.5 days.
Okay, yeah. The first day was when I showed up and checked in there and everything.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I just kind of took that it easy
that night. That was the shopping day.
Right,
okay,
right.
Okay. Okay, hey, finally I show up here shortly.
Okay, so day 7, I took the Shinkansen over to Nagoya to meet a good friend of mine named Paul.
All right. Well, let me catch you up on where I was, because I arrived the day before.
Yeah, what happened?
Pretty good flight. I got super lucky. I was sitting in the middle 4 seats, but the 2 seats in the middle were empty.
Nice.
So I got to spread my legs out, and I had all the leg room I needed.
Awesome.
Flight went really well. There was, unfortunately, a medical emergency, but we didn't have to divert or anything. The person survived. That was good.
Give me more detail on that.
They just, all of a sudden, there were a bunch of flight attendants crowded around the bathroom in front of me, and I hear over the PA system, is there a doctor on board? Is there a doctor on board? Please come see the flight attendants. We have a medical emergency. And they paged that a couple times, and eventually some young guy got up and went and helped. He was on vacation, I'm sure, so thank you for your service, young doctor.
He wasn't a doctor of political science or something. He was like a real medical doctor.
He had a stethoscope. So
on him?
Apparently. I mean, in his luggage, maybe. I don't know.
How?
Maybe they had it on the plane, but all I saw was him wearing a stethoscope.
Do doctors just wear those everywhere they go?
Maybe. You never know when there's going to be an emergency.
Wow. That's dedication to your...
Yeah, this person was in the bathroom for a couple hours, and eventually they got them into a seat. And when we all landed, they asked everyone to stay seated, and they got a wheelchair and brought them off the plane.
Exciting.
Not really, but it was the most exciting thing that happened on the flight, I guess.
I've never seen something like that happen on a plane.
Yeah, but otherwise, flight went super well as it could. So I was happy. I managed to not get great sleep, but I was like nodding in and out for a few hours. So I actually felt okay when I landed in the early afternoon.
Hmm.
I was able to exchange my money. I got my train ticket for the next day and went to check into my hotel in Shinagawa, the same one that you stayed at that you recommended for me.
Nice.
The picture of your room, I was like, dude, that might have been the same room I slept in.
I was going to ask you, what was your room number?
The same. I don't remember now, but... So then I went to get dinner. So it was like 6 p.m. at this point. And I got on the train and went to Shibuya. And you weren't kidding, man. It was so hot and muggy in Japan.
Yeah.
I was dying on the train. I was just sweating. We were packed in there like sardines. It was rush hour. I was just like, okay, I hate rush hour Japan. Like, that wasn't fun. But the dinner was great. And I went back and I slept pretty well and felt good in the morning.
Good.
Hopped on the early train. And funny enough, we had both bought our train tickets separately. We both arrived at Nagoya Station at exactly 9:04 a.m.
Well, that was not a coincidence.
Oh, did you buy your ticket after I text you?
Yeah, I asked asked Paul when he was going to be there, and you said 9:04. So I looked at the trains and
there
I
happened
picked
to
out
be
a,
one.
There was one that arrived at 9:04, and then I texted you all excited. We're going to get there the exact same minute.
I mean, that's cool. We came from opposite directions and arrived at the same minute.
Yeah, that was cool. And I was glad that, you know, there's a silver lining to every time that an adventure goes a little off the rails, you know, when things don't go as planned. So I was glad to be able to get to Nagoya much earlier than expected, and we could spend the morning seeing some things I didn't think I was going to get to see.
Yeah, that was actually a cool day.
It was really cool. So we met up at the station, and we immediately headed over to Atsuta Jingu. This is an extremely old shrine. Paul, do you realize this was established in 192 AD,
say? That's crazy.
That's what they say. And it was built to house the legendary sword Kusanagi, one of the three imperial regalia of Japan.
Yeah, an incredibly important and sacred shrine.
There's a picture of us all excited to see each other. There's a picture of, there's this huge torii gate in front of this shrine. It's massive, like one of the biggest I've seen. It's all natural wood color too.
Yeah, then you walk through this beautiful forest on your way up to the shrine.
Yeah, that part of it reminded me a little bit of Meiji Jingu. Did you end up going to Meiji?
I did, and that's exactly what I was thinking. Walking up through Meiji, I was like, this feels like Atsuta Shrine.
Yeah. Totally. I noticed this. A lot of places that we went to this trip just had like little collections of bonsai trees out front randomly. That was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, we saw so many bonsai.
Yeah. So the main shrine building itself is really cool. I was excited to see it. Because it's so old and it predates the Chinese influence, the architecture is very different from what you see on most temples and shrines these days. Very straight lines. There's no like curving up at the end of the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Just purely Japanese architecture.
I was really excited to see that.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of really interesting buildings in the shrine complex too. And you can, like, some of them you have to buy tickets to, but I'd say it's worth it because we got into a couple places where you can do some really cool stuff.
Yeah. So you mentioned this shrine's famous for having the sacred imperial sword. So there's a museum here all about swords. They had so many swords on display. I've never seen so many katana in the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
But the coolest part was they had real swords there that you could pick up.
That was super exciting to see. I always wondered, like, I wanted to feel one of those in my hand. How heavy are these things? How are they balanced, you know?
Yeah.
What does the handle even feel like?
They're tied down, so you have a limited range of motion, but it was still really fun to pick up the sword and be able to move it a little bit.
Yeah, just being able to feel the weight in your hand was really interesting. So I got videos of us picking up these swords.
And then they had the two comically large swords that you could just barely pick up.
They're insane. They're like, how long is that? Maybe like over 6 feet.
The blade there is probably at least 5 feet.
Yeah.
And then the pommel is 2.5 feet.
They're ridiculous. I actually looked these up because I remember when we were there, it's like, why are these so big? Nobody could possibly fight with these. They're so big. Apparently, there was a famous samurai in the Sengoku period. His name was Magara Naotaka. He was a giant in that time because he was almost 7 feet tall.
Wow.
And supposedly, he used one of these giant swords that was even taller than him.
That's crazy.
I find that hard to believe, but it's kind of cool to think about. You know? Yeah, these swords are massive and just insanely heavy.
Like, we could pick them up, but, like, not super easily.
Like, just imagine trying to swing that at some, at anything. It's unreasonable.
I'd maybe be able to do one good sweep, but then
you're totally vulnerable.
I'd be off balance, and it'd take me 5 seconds to get the sword back up anywhere.
Yeah, it just has so much momentum. It's like you're leaving yourself open to attack.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was cool, though. It was really fun.
It was very, very cool.
Put a smile on my face.
Yep.
There's also a little garden there that was nice that had a little snack shop by.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was nice. But then we went to another garden, Shirotori Garden. Not far away, right? We just walked over there.
Yeah, we walked.
What did you think of this garden?
It was pretty cool. It had a lot of different stuff because it had some waterfalls. It had a river waterfall area, then the bamboo area, and then it had a big pond area. So it had a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, a landscape garden, lots of different fields. Like, I like how as you're walking through there, it just feels like all these different types of places. That's the point of a landscape garden, is to contain all of these different types of terrain in a very small area.
Yeah, I'd say it's in the upper half of gardens I've been to.
I would definitely agree with that. I also liked that there were a lot of ducks and birds and
a cat.
There was a cat drinking from the pond. Just the wildlife was kind of fun to see.
Yeah.
And there were some colors here, I guess.
At least that tree.
Not a lot.
It was just starting a little bit.
There was enough for some very nice pictures as I'm flipping through these. They had some koi in the pond. Oh, just nice. Just a nice garden. Lots of bridges, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice.
Okay, after that, this is where we split up, right? We had to go find food.
Yeah, we split up for lunch.
So I walked through Osu Shopping Street, which is nice. Pretty standard for a shopping street. You know, they got a bunch of Nagoya specialties and souvenirs and stuff. I got some ramen down there that was very tasty. And then at the end of that shopping street is Osukanon Temple. Before we get there, did you have anything to say about your lunch that day?
You know, what I will say is that we've gotten enough questions about people wondering about vegan food in Japan that I started writing Paul's Guide to Vegan Food in Japan.
Nice.
And I'm almost finished. So actually, hopefully by the time this episode is up, I will have that done, and maybe we'll post it on our travel tools page on our website or something.
Awesome. That sounds great.
So I will mention kind of like outline of what it's like being vegan in Japan, and then list some of the restaurants I've been to in all the cities I've been to.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, so Osukanon Temple. This is a temple from the Kamakura period. Paul, did you realize that this temple houses a statue of Kanon that was carved by Kobo Daishi?
I don't remember that. Maybe I'd heard that.
I feel like we heard about Kobo Daishi so many times on this trip.
He popped up in every single city we were at.
Yeah. And we went a lot of different places. Like, this guy got around. He's one of the most famous monks, maybe the single most famous monk in
Quite
Japan.
Possibly.
Like, he went all over the place. He's the guy that's in eternal meditation at Koya-san.
Yep.
Anyway, the temple. Impressive. Very popular, too. I mean, it's right in the middle of the city.
It's very touristy, but in a good way. Like, I get why you'd want to come see this. They're playing chants over the speakers. They're burning a bunch of incense. So it really kind of feels like you're in a Buddhist temple.
Yeah.
The building's beautiful.
It really is. It's really impressive. Big stairs going up to the main hall.
Yeah, so it's a nice place.
Yeah, walk down that shopping street, pop out at the temple. That's a good chunk of the day right there.
Yeah.
Next, we got on a train. How long did it take to get here? Is that the one that was like kind of far away?
It was
like
I think it was only a little over 30 minutes. It wasn't too bad.
Oh, I'm thinking of the SC Maglev thing. That took a while to get to.
Yes.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we went to this museum that has a comically long name. The Toyota Commemorative Museum of Industry and Technology.
Yeah, this place was so cool. It was way more than I thought it would be and kind of blew me away.
Ditto. I was expecting a museum about Toyota cars. That's all I really was expecting.
Yeah.
This museum's actually split into two halves. One half of it is actually about the Toyota textile. Toyota did textiles before they did cars, which I didn't really realize.
That's how they became a big company.
Yeah, like these days they have all these different branches making all these different parts of the cars, including all the textiles that go into the cars.
Yeah.
But they went into so much depth about different kinds of fibers. We got to see like a one-on-one demonstration of how you turn raw cotton into thread.
Yeah, that was
cool. Amazing.
Because I never completely understood that before.
Yeah, I'd never seen a spinning wheel in action. And the way that my brain thought that those things worked was completely wrong.
Yes, same. Yeah, she literally had a pile of cotton with seeds still in it and turned it into thread while explaining to us all the steps of how she did it.
That was really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, this was really interactive. There were a lot of things that moved and worked here.
That's the projectile loom. That's the one most common, I think, in manufacturing these days.
Yeah. I was also really excited to see the looms because I'd heard about these looms from, you know, my interest in Japanese denim. Heard about the different types of looms. They got the shuttle looms, they got the projectile looms, but we saw types of looms I didn't even know existed. There are looms. Do I need to explain what a loom is? These are weaving machines, basically. The basic idea of how these work is that there are threads stretched out in one direction, and then there are threads woven across them perpendicular. But there's so many different ways of weaving those, like of getting the threads from one side of the loom to the other. I didn't realize that they had looms that just shoot the thread like with puffs of air.
Yeah.
Or ones that do it with little water jets. And we got to see these in action. It's incredible.
They probably have at least 100 looms there, going from like the very earliest ones of the company up to the most modern day stuff.
And they go into extreme detail about how they work, like how the shuttles are switched out and like just all these little pieces of the process. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it was so cool.
Like I almost thought that the textile half of this museum was even cooler than the car half of the museum.
Same.
And the car stuff was really cool too.
Yeah, so then you get to the huge second wing and it's car museum now.
And they're showing how they used to have to like hammer sheet metal into all the pieces of the car. They had like a wooden frame that they would bend the metal over to shape it perfectly. It's crazy. The amount of work that used to go into these cars, like handmade cars, basically.
Yeah.
And they had all these exhibits about how Toyota had to like develop not just their own parts, but their own materials. They had all these ways of testing the metal to make sure it was pure enough and strong enough and all this stuff.
Yep.
Just amazing. Like, I'd never thought about all that, all the stuff that went into making cars.
Yeah. I like the part where they have all the robot arms moving, kind of showing you how the factories work.
Yeah, that was cool. I'd never seen that in person. They had a whole floor of all these cars, some of them with like pieces cut out of them so you can see the inner workings. I mean, we went to a lot of museums on this trip. This was easily one of the best ones.
Absolutely.
Maybe the best one.
We were there for 2 hours and it did not feel like it.
I could have stayed longer.
Yeah, they were closing. We had to leave.
Yeah.
So yeah, time flew by. There's so much to see here. You could easily spend an hour in each wing and still have more to see.
Absolutely. So then we went back to Nagoya Station, and I was kind of rushing because I really wanted to get to this place called the Sky Promenade before sunset. Pretty close to Nagoya Station, there's this big skyscraper that you can get to the top of and look out over the city. It was pretty great.
Yeah, the views were awesome.
Yeah. You can see in all directions. There's even a little restaurant up there and some really nice seating. You can just get a drink and look out over the city. Man, this day was my first taste of Nagoya, and I feel like it's vastly underrated, man. I mean, I get why everybody goes to Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka on their first trip, but like, Nagoya is way less packed with tourists, but still really cool. Like, you can get a really good sense of what, I mean, a big Japanese city is like. What is it, the third biggest city in Japan?
Fourth.
Fourth.
Third biggest urban area.
Okay.
Because Yokohama, I think, is like the third biggest city.
Forgot about Yokohama.
But yeah, you're totally right. I very rarely hear people talking about going to Nagoya or the cool things you could do there, but this place is awesome.
Yeah. I also really like, it feels like a modern city, of course.
Yeah.
It's a huge city, but it also retains some of that feel of like these kind of older little alleys with the little restaurants and lanterns, and like, there are just parts of it where you feel like you've been transported back 5 decades or something.
Yeah.
And it's just cool. I really like the way that everything kind of fits together there. It's got a unique vibe, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that was a good day. We got up there to see the view at sunset, and then we stayed and saw it at night too, which was kind of cool. It was pretty dark by the time we left.
Yeah. Oh, I did get a couple nice pictures of the sunset there.
Yeah.
Oh, you can see the castle from up there too. We got a little preview of the next day. Oh, and that night I just found a random sushi place basically across the street from our hotel. And I was really glad I found this. I was walking down the street and I saw some Westerners come out of this stairwell, and I'm like, oh, hey, did you guys just come from that sushi place up there? I asked if it was good, and they're like, yeah, it was really good. And it was like one of those little places where they got the menu on the wall in all Japanese. There's no English. Like, very authentic feeling place. You know, it wasn't a touristy place at all. And the food was great. What did you have for dinner?
I went to Miho's Kitchen Grains, this specialty vegan place where they make a lot of vegan meats. Their specialty was like a grilled eel type of meat that's popular in Japan. And it tasted like charred meat. Like, they were using a blowtorch on it, I think, in the back. I don't know exactly how they made it. It was really interesting.
Did it have like eel sauce on there?
Yeah, it definitely was saucy. It was like charred and saucy.
I would be curious.
It tasted good, but I've been vegan so long, it was almost like too real. I was kind of like, ugh.
Okay. You enjoyed it though?
I did. And it was like a 4-course meal. It was the most expensive meal I had while I was there, but
wow.
I was just stuffed at the end, and it was good.
Nice. Well, I guess that was the end of the first week.
Oh man, that went by so quick.
Yeah. Well, things didn't go 100% as planned for that first week. But, you know, that's how adventures go sometimes. Can't expect everything to go perfectly.
That's part of the thrill of traveling. You never quite know how it's going to go.
Exactly. And like I said, I met a lot of great people that helped make up for any rough parts, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I guess before we wrap it up, I should thank our Shogun level patrons, Wesley C., Nicholas McKibben, Kevin Harris, Brady K., Jack, Michael Morris, David Imani, Darwin Perrier, Ethan Teague, Yasmin, Jason, Katarina and Ellery, Susan, Tori, Shaked Rosenthal, Tina Anderson, Alexa Gonzalez, Pamela Arola, Kevin Phillips, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly. I looked up on YouTube how to pronounce these German names properly. Franzi and Matthias.
Okay.
Thank you so much, all of our wonderful Shogun-level patrons. That list is getting longer.
Yeah.
And A big thank you to all of our other patrons as well. We really appreciate the support.
Thank you.
If you're interested in checking out our Patreon or our itineraries or any of the other stuff we have out there, you can check out our website at sightseeingjapanpodcast.com. Paul, what are we talking about next time?
Trip recap week 2.
All right. I probably could have guessed that, I guess, but that'll be fun. More time in Nagoya. A lot of day trips from Nagoya.
Yeah, we got around.
Yeah, we got some recommendations, and we met a bunch more great people.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.